relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One. The Russians want to negotiate. Can you trust a former KGB colonel? Well, that's going to be the topic of One-on-One today with somebody who knows better than anyone else what's really going on in a communist or post-communist state and within the Kremlin. He is Grove City College's director of the Faith and Freedom Center, an author of numerous seminal works, such as the most recent, The Devil and Karl Marx. Professor Paul Kengor, welcome back to America First One-on-One.
Well, thank you, Seb. It is always good to be with you, sir.
Let's start with an article you sent me yesterday from the American Spectator that kind of helps us. There's a concept in national security called strategic culture. I learned of it from one of the best, the late, great Colin Gray, a British-American dual national who served in the Reagan administration in the National Security Council. And the theory goes thusly, Paul, that every nation, every elite has a different strategic culture. Belgium thinks differently about war than Vanuatu. The Soviet Union thought differently about war than Americans did. That's strategic culture. Will you explain why the concept of death and human suffering or the cost and value of human life is a little bit different in Russia?
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote about in that piece for American Spectator yesterday, right? The Russians know death unlike any other people. And I mean, it depends on how long or how quickly you want to walk through this. And of course, it's no laughing matter. It's quite tragic. But going back the last 100 years, Seb, a little over 100 years, I guess, but back to World War One, the Russians from 1914 to 1917 lost more men in World War One than any other country. And that, in fact, they didn't even finish the war. Right. They were actually on the winning side, but they pulled out in 1917 after Tsar Nicholas II abdicated in March 1917. They would have been on our side in that war. They lost over 3 million people in that war. Now, to give you a sense of comparison, you know how many people we lost in World War One? About 110,000.
We arrived a little bit late, admittedly, but by comparison, yes. And then talk about World War II in terms of just death toll for Russia.
Okay, so World War II, about 400,000 Americans died, about 400,000 people from the United Kingdom. So take those two, add them up, multiply them by about 30.
Wow.
And you start to get close to what the Russians lost. The Russians in World War II probably lost about 27 million people. Now, it's probably more than half the total dead for all countries in World War II. From one nation. So I mean, it's absolutely staggering. Now, in between, what am I skipping in between? Well, the Russian Civil War, which follows World War One, that goes from 1918 to 1921. According to W. Bruce Lincoln, a historian of the Russian Civil War, they lost about 7 million dead Russian men, women, and children in the Civil War. So that's like double what they lost in World War One.
So when you look at the last 4 weeks, and we've just crossed the month of the war in Ukraine, when you see the reports of between 10 and 15,000 Russians killed, that's like a gnat bite in terms of death tolls that Russia has been used to.
Well, that's exactly right. And this is the key point, right? So for people who are saying right now, boy, I'll tell you, I don't know, man, the Russians are losing a lot of people over there in Ukraine. It's only a matter of time before they back off here and negotiate for peace. And I'm saying, are you kidding me? I mean, this is nothing compared to what the Russians are accustomed to, right? I mean, yeah, this is absolutely nothing at all. And somebody like Vladimir Putin, I'm more afraid here, Seb, of someone like Putin being so frustrated by what he's seeing on the battlefield from the typically incompetent Russian military commanders and so forth, that he says this is a waste of time. This is somebody who doesn't care about life in his own country, his own troops, and clearly in the Ukraine. I'm worried about somebody like him lashing out, not getting what he can get on the battlefield, and resorting to something like weapons of mass destruction. And our president has already said that if the Russians use WMD, quote, we would respond in kind, unquote. Another of the many statements in the last few weeks that he's had to walk back.
Well, let's be clear here. What he said was not with reference to WMD. It was specifically to chemical weapons of mass destruction,
right,
which he said in kind, which is, by the way, illegal. America doesn't have chemical weapons to use offensively. And since we signed in 1972 with the Soviet Union the ban on chemical and biological weapons, to say as the commander-in-chief that, yes, we're going to drop VX gas on Moscow. You know, Paul, as well as I do, that little video clip is being used by the Kremlin to say, see, we told you so.
Well, that's right. And he's increasingly, meaning Biden, getting sloppier and sloppier in his statements. Now, at first, he was very careful, right? He vetoed the idea that we could supply offensive jets, the Poles or whoever, in the Ukraine. He said, no, don't do that. That could prompt World War III. He rejected the idea of a no-fly zone because he said that would involve NATO planes, U.S. planes, you know, in offensive combat, shooting down Russian planes and killing Russians. So he's very careful about all of that at first. But in the last couple of weeks, especially that trip to Poland, Seb, right? He made the statement to Russian troops in Poland. I don't know if you have that on audio.
To American troops, to the 82nd Airborne.
Yeah, to American troops. I've got it right here in front of me. Good. Quote, he told this to U.S. troops in Poland. Quote, you're going to see when you're there. You're going to see women, young people, standing in the middle in front of a damn tank saying, I'm not leaving, unquote, right? You're going to see when you're there. And that was quickly walked back by a White House spokesperson. And that could have just been one of these sort of, you know, cognitive moments by Joe Biden where he didn't mean what he said. But there have been more of these. At the end of the speech in Warsaw last weekend, he made the comment about regime change, referred to Putin as a butcher.
Yeah, let's play that. We've got that from yesterday's show. This is a video cut two. This is the putative chief executive of America talking about the president of Russia.
Ukraine will never be a victory for Russia. For free people refused to live in a world of hopelessness and darkness. We will have a different future, a brighter future, rooted in democracy and principle, hope and light, of decency and dignity, of freedom and possibilities. For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
You understand Soviet-Russian propaganda. How useful is that 20-second clip to the killer who is Putin right now, Kengor?
Massively, massively useful. And Biden is garbling his words. He's stuttering. That's not JFK, right? That's not Ronald Reagan at the Brandenburg Gate. He's very inarticulate. And that statement, quote, for God's sake, this man cannot remain in power. You know, Antony Blinken responded immediately after that and said, quote, let me be clear, we do not have a strategy of regime change in Russia, unquote. And then when Biden got back home, I think he was walking out of mass on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And a reporter said to him, quote, Mr. President, do you want Putin removed? Mr. President, were you calling for regime change? And Biden just simply muttered no before getting in his car. And it was also President Macron of France who said this kind of rhetoric is not helpful, including Putin or Biden referring to Putin as a butcher. Macron said, we want to de-escalate. We don't want escalation in here. And I would add here, too, for all the liberals out there, Seb, who said, this is why you need to get rid of Donald Trump, right? Mr. Loose Lips Sink Ships, right?
Mr. Warmonger, Paul. Mr. Warmonger.
Right, the warmonger. We need somebody who's been on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, forever, longer than Fulbright himself, right? 30 or 40 years, somebody with tact and diplomatic skills, someone who's not sloppy, who doesn't fire from the lip or the hip. Well, right now, if I was Biden's handlers, I wouldn't let that guy go anywhere near a reporter or a microphone with anything but scripted comments, because he's getting sloppier and sloppier, and it's not good. It's potentially quite dangerous.
Why do we love having Paul Kenger on the show? Because he doesn't fire from the lip or the hip. He is the only guest who comes on the show. While we may have a couple of choice video or audio actualities, he preps. It's like we're going to class, and he's reading quotes for us off his computer, because that's how professional Professor Paul Kenger is. City College's director of the Institute for Faith and Freedom, author most recently of The Devil and Karl Marx. We will discuss that momentarily. But first things first, dear friends, never miss an episode of America First One-on-One. Be sure to be subscribed to this podcast. Go to your favorite platform. Go to Spotify. Punch in my name, Sebastian Gorka. Subscribe today. It's free. Write us a review and share the links, and never miss a moment. That's America First with me, Sebastian Gorka. If you haven't done so, dear friends, make sure you have registered for our Stand With Israel tour. Later this year, I am traveling with Dinesh D'Souza and his lovely wife, Debbie, to the Holy Land to go to the places that you may only have read about in the Bible. Jerusalem, the Temple Mount, Gethsemane, the shores of the Sea of Galilee. Do you want to walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth? Even if you've been before, you've never been with me and Dinesh. Join us for the trip of a lifetime. It's not about acquisition, stuff you buy and hoard. It's about memories. Join us. I can't wait myself. Call 855-565-5519 or go to standwithisraeltour.com today. That's 855-565-5519, standwithisraeltour.com. Mike Lindell has a true passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. Therefore, he created the Giza Dream bed sheets. They look and feel incredible, which translates to an even better night's sleep for you. Mike's latest amazing deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you will receive 60% off the Giza Dream sheets that come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. You'll receive a full set for as low as $39.99. And for a limited time, with any purchase, you'll receive Mike's soft cover book free when you use promo code GORKA. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code GORKA. Along with this offer, you'll also get deep, deep discounts on all his MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-829-8468, promo code GORKA. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA. Paul, they say that, and it kind of blows my mind. I see well-meaning people, I see idiots say, well, we've got to give Putin an off-ramp. We've got to, negotiate some peace. When do dictators or authoritarians care about off-ramps? Since 1917, when do they want to actually have a decent status quo, Professor Kenger?
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. And in fact, when you have somebody who doesn't care about human life, right, as Vladimir Putin is clearly demonstrating right now, he wants to beat the Ukraine. And this is in his heart. He's gonna probably keep at it until he perseveres. And this, again, I take you back to that my numbers in that American Spectator piece. What the Russians do, people who say, oh, they're getting their tails kicked right now in Ukraine. They always get their tails kicked. They always lose massive numbers of people.
Since Napoleon.
Since Napoleon. Yeah, we're talking millions in World War One, more than any other country, millions in their Civil War, tens of millions in World War Two, more than any other country. And by the way, in Afghanistan, they were there for 10 years. They were there from 79 to 89. All right. They stayed in there for a long time. The only reason that they went out, well, other than Stinger missiles and Reagan and our policy and arming the Mujahideen, but Mikhail Gorbachev called it a burning sore, right? And at that point in 1988, he pulled out his troops. But they are always in for the long haul. It's not in their nature to be there. And there I'm talking about kind of Russian strategic culture generally. And remember, Putin spent 15 years in the KGB.
Right.
The guy was a lieutenant colonel in the KGB. So he's probably even more committed. No, I don't expect him to tuck tail here and suddenly change his mind.
So let's talk about this. So you've authored a library of books. You've written about Blessed St. John Paul, A Pope and the President, Ronald Reagan, The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism. Dupes is one of my favorites. Guys, Dupes is essential reading when it comes to the useful idiots and those who helped the Soviet Union. And most recently, The Devil and Karl Marx. Let's pretend it's day one of Paul Kenger's Communism and Russia 101 course. What is the first thing that neophytes, that amateurs need to understand about Russia? Explain why Russia isn't like France. Russia isn't like Switzerland. France isn't like Canada. Explain why Russia isn't like those countries and why it is so very, very different. And also the importance of the strong man.
Yeah, it is so very, very different. And it's really kind of deep-seated. In fact, our old friend, the late Richard Pipes, who was professor at Harvard for a long time, going back to 1950. He just died a few years ago. He wrote books on the Russian Revolution, the Russian Civil War, communism, history. And he was in kind of a battle with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, of all people, right, who we also greatly respect, because Pipes made comments like this, and Solzhenitsyn thought that Pipes was making a comment on the Russian people generally, right? That this is a people that's kind of destined for authoritarian leaders, that this is part of Russian culture. This is how they are. And I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to say that.
But let's just say, and God bless Pipes, who is a giant in your field, but there's not a lot of evidence to the contrary that it isn't something deep-seated in Russian culture, from Ivan the Terrible all the way to Putin, this atavistic innate proclivity to follow a strong man. That's not a statement unfounded by empirical data, is it, Paul?
No, that's right. In fact, I remember in the 1990s, post-communist Russia period, and I was talking to somebody from there, and he said, look, there are no Thomas Jeffersons in Russia, right? You have this country so rich in playwrights, writers, literature, pianists, composers, right? Tchaikovsky, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, right? And some of them with great statements about morality, Dostoevsky among them. But they've never had a Milton Friedman,
yeah.
Right? They've never had a Thomas Jefferson or James Madison. Boris Yeltsin was probably about the closest that they got. And Boris Yeltsin, you know, God rest his soul, is the one that gave us Vladimir Putin. In fact, Yeltsin
And let's be clear why he gave us Vladimir Putin. He gave us Vladimir Putin to protect himself for the millions and millions and millions of dollars he stole from the Russian people. He put Putin in place to protect him and his family, Paul.
Well, he and the Duma, in fact, he went through Yeltsin had this sort of heroic period from about 1987 through 1994 and 1995. But his second term was just so corrupt, so bad. The Duma, led by the communists in the Duma, tried to impeach him in 1998. He went through a period in 1988-99 where he went through five prime ministers, right?
Yeah.
So Yeltsin was actually president. And he got to a point where he reached a compromise candidate with the Duma in August 1999, and it was a guy named Vladimir Putin. And you and I are both old enough to remember this, right? Remember Y2K, the eve of Y2K. We had this shocking announcement, not of an accidentally launched nuclear missile coming from Russia, which everybody was actually afraid of at that point. But Yeltsin comes out and announces to the world that he's resigning as president of Russia. And he gives probably the nicest speech of his entire time in office. But he says, you know, why should I continue to stay here when we have a strong man that we all know, and the future of every Russian's hopes and dreams are pinned. And this strong man is Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
So Putin comes in March of 2000. He wins the election that year, wins again 4 years later. That was supposed to be the end of it.
And we have to talk about what happened in 2009 with a certain series of bombings of Russian apartment buildings. We're talking to Paul Kengel, the author of The Devil and Karl Marx. If you've had enough of the feckless leadership in the White House, a leadership that said to the president of Ukraine, hey, we'll send you a plane. You can run away like a coward. Well, what did he do? He's a real man. Volodymyr Zelensky said, I don't need a ride. I need ammunition. And what are we doing? We're celebrating that man and the Ukrainian people with the latest product at SebGorkaStore.com. It's the T-shirt with the president sending his message to Biden. Get the hottest selling item, SebGorkaStore.com. That's SebGorkaStore.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Домой!
That's not Band of Brothers. That's not the soundtrack of Private Ryan. That is real, real recording from Ukraine, from a civilian area under shelling, under machine gun fire. That's the reality. What can we do about it? Not a lot, especially with Biden in the White House, especially with the polls being betrayed by Washington, D.C. However, Food for the Poor has allocated 3,000 pastors in Ukraine who are helping to get food and refugee supplies to the women and children stuck there. One of them who we managed to get this very well-spoken interview with.
There is lack of food, there is no drinking water, there is no medicine. A lot of people are just, I think, starving to death in their apartments right now with no help.
Please, please help. We are 24 hours away from ending this month's appeal, this year's appeal. We are just $2,000 away from hitting our target. Make a difference. Make a donation in any amount. The food, the supplies will get to those children stuck in Ukraine. 44 million people, only 3 million have escaped. Please support this God-forsaken, benighted nation. 855-330-HOPE or sebgorka.com and the Help Ukrainian banner at the top. You can make a difference. 855-330-4673, sebgorka.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com and the Help Ukraine banner at the top. Paul, you mentioned this very peculiar way that Putin was slotted into place to cover Yeltsin's back as he rode off into the sunset with hundreds of millions of dollars putatively. His rise to power is also inextricably linked, is it not, to the bombing of several apartment blocks in Russia that, given the evidence, don't seem to actually have been done by the Chechen terrorists he said executed them. How much does this indicate the type of man the West is dealing with?
Yeah, I remember there was a cartoon in March of 2000. And in fact, I show it to my students in one of my courses at Grove City College. And it had, it said put in or put in, like, and then it said put out. And it had this garbage can of skulls marked Chechnya on it. So, you know, already as soon as he came in, You know, Putin was already hammering Chechnya, you know, violence from the very beginning. And again, this guy should have been out of power in 2008. So the Russian Constitution had 2 4-year terms. He immediately instead made himself prime minister, made Dmitry Medvedev president. You know, Medvedev was his lapdog. That's the one that you know, called Obama Comrade Obama. And Obama said to Medvedev, I'll have more flexibility after the election, right? That was in 2012. And Medvedev said, very good, I tell Vladimir, right? Yeah. And then Vladimir found a way to get himself back into power. Here we are, 2020, in power now for 22 years. This was supposed to be 8 years. And he's in power probably till at least 2036. Frankly, he's probably in power until he dies, right?
So let's stop there for a second. This is important. What is the likelihood, given how many people he's killed or had killed, including Nemtsov, that this man cannot be replaced because there is no organic resistance that can take him on?
Well, I think it's a good question. And, you know, Lindsey Graham called for him to be removed, and people had a cow over that. Of course, Biden seems to have said that over the weekend, yeah. Right? But really, truly, the only thing that would probably resolve this would, in fact, be Putin being removed from power. But what are the chances? I mean, this is very, very difficult. I mean, look, we've had three Kims in charge of Korea, yeah. Right? North Korea now, going back to the mid-1940s. No one's ever able to get to him. How many assassination attempts were there against Saddam Hussein, right? Saddam Hussein couldn't be taken out. Hitler, I mean, there were a number of assassination attempts against Hitler. Even Stalin, at one point, Molotov and the boys tried to move in on Stalin. It's very, very difficult, especially with somebody like Putin, who's been taking out dissidents and people who disagree with him from the very beginning.
Especially an individual who worked for the secret police, let's be clear. You can't denude him of this idea that he's a champion of Western Christendom and he's fighting the globalists. No, he's a stinking KGB colonel. We're talking to Professor Paul Kengor. He is the executive director, senior director of the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College. Dear friends, the war in Europe is perfect cover for cyber hackers and for thieves. They're not going after the usual scams with dodgy emails and phone calls and text messages. It's the big one. It's the most valuable thing you own. Home title theft. How does it work? The title to your home, to my home, to all of our homes are kept online. They go in, remove you from the title, put themselves on it, take out loans on your home, and then they disappear, leaving you with the payments and the calls from the collection agency. How do you find out if you're a victim already? Well, you could go to the county recorder's office every day and check. But who does that? Instead, register with Home Title Lock and protect yourself. It's the most valuable thing you own. Do it today before it's too late. HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. Paul, you are the author of seminal works. You mentioned the late, great Professor Pipes. I want to list at least a handful of your books right now. You've written The Crusader. You've written Dupes. You did, I think, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Communism. You did A Pope and the President. And then most recently, The Devil and Karl Marx. Would you give us just a little précis, a thumbnail, of how crucial real leadership in the West was to the victory against the Soviet Union and the threat of communism in the 20th century. So I grew up under Margaret Thatcher. For me, she is crucial to understanding the fall of the Berlin Wall, the dissolution of the Soviet Union on Christmas Day 1991. But talk also about Ronald Reagan and Blessed St. John Paul II.
Yeah, our friend John O'Sullivan did a book, right, on the president, the pope, and the prime minister. And so Margaret Thatcher is definitely one of them. You know, I would add here Vaclav Havel, Lech Walesa, you know, Gorbachev. I give Gorbachev his due, even if a lot of what he did was unintentional.
But right? Careful, let's be clear here. Gorbachev, Archie Brown's biography is garbage. Gorbachev did what he did, perestroika and glasnost, to reform communism, not to get rid of it.
Well, yeah, and it was to preserve the Soviet Union. And he said that his entire life, right?
Right.
His goal was never for the Soviet Union to fall apart. That's right. Perestroika and Glasnost were about making it a kinder, better Soviet Union. But it was Reagan who wanted to take the Soviet Union down. And you mentioned John Paul II as well. In fact, in that piece for Spectator yesterday, I quote him. He said, every human being is unique, precious, and unrepeatable. Right? Unique, precious, and unrepeatable. They're all made in the image of God. And unfortunately, to Vladimir Putin and this long line of Soviet leaders, every human being is not unique, precious, and unrepeatable. They're actually repeatable, which is why they're willing to eliminate or allow so many of them to die in combat, or in leaders like Stalin and Lenin, eliminate or liquidate them wholly if they stand in the way. But what we had in the 1980s, or really that period from 1978, 79 on, Margaret Thatcher came in. Well, John Paul II came in first, Margaret Thatcher, and then Ronald Reagan came in 1981. Reagan, among other things, did everything he could to try to clamp down on the Soviet production of energy exports, natural gas, oil, and we, in fact, we worked with the Saudis to make up for any lack of oil that wasn't coming from the Soviet Union during that time. The Saudis worked with us also not only to hurt the Soviets, but the Iranians as well. So the fact that Biden right now will be looking to Iran, Venezuela, and other places, he's doing everything that Ronald Reagan wouldn't have done in the 1980s.
And how crucial was that moment where the quote-unquote amiable dunce was lambasted and called a warmonger for when he gave that speech where he called out the regime in Moscow for what it was, and he used the phrase evil empire, that clarity, that moral clarity, compared to today when, you know, we go to Venezuela, an ally of Moscow, to buy oil as Moscow is bombing civilians in Ukraine. Talk to us about the moral clarity of the statecraft at the end of the Cold War.
Yeah, I think George Will said Reagan remoralized the conflict, right? You know, Ronald Reagan declared war on what he called moral equivalency. This idea that, as he put it in the Evil Empire speech, right, that the Cold War was just sort of one big mistake, right? That, you know, the West was just as culpable and guilty of starting and prolonging the Cold War as the Soviet Union. Reagan said that's complete rubbish, right? The American system is far superior to the Soviet system. And Reagan even said in that speech, and probably the part, definitely the part that was most missed by liberals, Reagan pointed the finger at the U.S. He said, we have our own legacy of sin in this country. He condemned racism, anti-Semitism, right? The United States is slavery. He said, we're not perfect. He said, but, you know, America in the 1980s at that point in time was certainly far superior to the Soviet Union, which was an evil empire.
And when you hear people today, Paul Kengor, who say they're conservatives, voted for President Trump, who clearly had clarity on who America's enemies are, say things like, well, Putin's the good guy. He's fighting the globalists. He's fighting for Christian civilization. And we're really responsible because NATO surrounded Russia and, you know, the bio labs that we were helping to fund were going to launch an attack against Russia. You know the history intimately of this regime of the 20th century. What is your response as an American conservative?
Yeah, I would tell conservatives, okay, so it is indeed true that Vladimir Putin put the first restrictions on abortion since Stalin, all right? Stalin actually put restrictions on abortion in 1936. In fact, abortion was so out of control, Stalin said, we're going to lose entire generations of Russians. We got to stop this. He banned it in 36. Trotsky condemned him for it. Khrushchev brought it back in 1955. And then the first restrictions were put on abortion in Russia, not until Putin. Putin, yes, supports traditional marriage. He says, we will have mama and papa in our country. But even if conservatives agree with him on these cultural issues, gender issues, perhaps some, you know, sexual issues, I guess, if that's the way to put it, it doesn't mean that he's a good guy, right?
But let's flip the coin. I mean, didn't Hitler do exactly the same thing? If you were Aryan and Germanic, you had to be in a traditional marriage and have babies, and you were given concessions. I mean, that was Adolf Hitler, Paul.
Yeah, and Hitler liked puppies, right?
Yeah, he liked dogs. So what does that mean? Hitler's now a good guy? Are you crazy?
Right, exactly. No, so I mean, there are things like this. It's more complicated than this. But the fact of the matter is Putin invaded independent Ukraine, which declared independence in 1991. He has absolutely no right to do this. And also the idea, too, that expanding NATO, you know, did this in some way, provoked Putin, that's absolute nonsense as well. And one of the things that we were worried about in the whole expansion of NATO debate in the 1990s and letting in Russia was the fact that what if you let in a country like Russia? And you have a NATO member that goes and invades one of its neighbors, right? What do you do, right? Can we let in Russia that might invade Ukraine?
Turkey and Greece and Cyprus was bad enough, right, Paul?
Right. And we let in first Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic. That was in the 1990s. We let in Estonia.
And let's be clear, the phrase you're using is let in. No, NATO didn't invade and gobble up anybody. I was in Hungary working on it for the first conservative government, helping them apply to NATO. And they had to meet standards. It was a club you had to join. It wasn't the Warsaw Pact where you were gobbled up by somebody far larger. We're talking to the author of A Pope and a President, Paul Kengel. This is America First One-on-One, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans across the country, me included. But it's not just me, it's people like Reggie from Florida. This is his story. I have a lot of pain from aging, and after only 4 days of using Relief Factor, I'm already experiencing less pain and stiffness. Can't wait to see how I feel in a couple more weeks. Relief Factor is a blessing sent by God. Find out for yourself. It's super easy. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee. By the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Reggie, and thousands of your fellow Americans. Call today, 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Paul, we've only got a few minutes left. Your most recent work is The Devil and Karl Marx. Let's just give our millions of listeners and viewers across the nation a little taste of the darkest aspects of what we're talking about, because this isn't just an ideology competing with democracy or republicanism or free markets. There's something truly diabolical about communism, is there not? Because this book documents it.
There is, and I think even liberals are finally starting to see this now, right? When you look at the worst countries in the world with the worst behavior, right? One of them is run by a former KGB lieutenant colonel. The other is communist China. Then there's North Korea. We still have issues in Cuba, right? So here we are after the Cold War, 30 years after the end of the Cold War, and we're still getting all these international headaches and problems and brutality by communists, of all things. And also to pick up from the last segment, this is a really important point on NATO expansion and aggression and imperialism and so forth. You know, this whole idea that the United States let these countries in, or like pulled them in, Hungary, Czech Republic, and Poland, as some sort of American imperialism, is insanity. That is complete. These countries were begging us to come into NATO in the 1990s. There was a really vigorous debate in the United States in the 1990s.
Yes.
People like Zbigniew Brzezinski, George Kennan, and others, right? And Americans saying, you know, I don't know. Do you think we would really go to war in Poland? If Poland were attacked by Russia, I don't know. Should we let them in? I don't know. Right, back and forth. And these countries begged us to let them in. And in fact, some of the countries put it on referendum. I think Poland, the vote was like 85% among the Polish people, right? Saying, yes, please, let us in. And then all the other countries in Eastern Europe, same thing, from Slovakia to Slovenia. We even let in North Macedonia, of all things, right? So, do you want your kid dying for the North Macedonians? You know, probably not, right? But we weren't expanding NATO as an act of imperialism, just the opposite. The more countries that we let in, the more it commits us to having to defend those countries.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you mentioned that. I should have talked about that more on my show, and I will. That this was a very, very solid debate. For the whole of the 1990s, we discussed this in Washington, right, in Paris, in London. Should we? Shouldn't we? What do they bring to the table? Are they democracies? Are they stable? This isn't a question of us gobbling them up. It is a club for collective defense of people who must be serious allies to each other. We've just scratched the surface. Educate yourself. Read any of the superlative works by Paul Gengor. Start with A Pope and the President, and then don't forget his most recent, which is, of course, The Devil and Karl Marx. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Airstrikes and bombardment, as we talked about earlier, both sides fighting very, very hard over Mariupol. From a geographic perspective, clearly it's very important to both sides because of where it's located, right there at the southern sort of end of the Donbas region.
I think three today. That's okay.
You had three yesterday.
I want to know one thing. Who made that person an admiral? What a clown show. Welcome, dear friends. That's happening right now live. The disgrace to the Navy that is John Kirby, who is the Pentagon press secretary or spokesman, is taking questions. A disaster of a press secretary. We're going to be giving examples of how the narrative is falling apart when it comes to America and the Ukraine, and answering the question, who's in charge, really? I'm Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump, and this is America First on the Salem Radio Network. We will be joined by perhaps one of the greatest experts on the communist threat to America alive today, Professor Paul Kengor, for our one-on-one. We'll be connecting to the West Coast and our warrior princess Jennifer Horn. Trish Regan will talk to us the latest startling economic figures that all of us have to live through. And one of the most popular YouTubers out there, Mr. Reagan, Chris Coles, on the revelations that have been released this morning by Chris Rufo, the inside videos from Disney on their secret gay agenda. Yes, for all of us who thought the evangelicals were crazy for decades, they weren't. These organizations, these mega buck huge corporations, have become part of the grooming complex of the left. All right, let's talk to the issue of the Ukraine. What are we doing in the Ukraine? What is the White House permitting to occur? We've had the man who sadly bears the moniker, the rank of commander-in-chief, say that this man, for God's sake, must be removed. Then he said to the 82nd Airborne, "You'll see it soon enough." See what? That's so weird. Are we deploying troops to the Ukraine? This is his attempt to backpedal those comments. Cut five.
I had a meeting with the heads of state of our four allies in NATO, France, Germany, the United States, and Great Britain.
Hang on. Can you just hear what he said? They said, "I had a meeting with the heads of states of these countries, including the United States." Is he meeting with himself? Is he senile? Do you need any more evidence? Did you hear what he just said? "I had a meeting with the heads of states of four countries to include the United States." Did he look in the mirror? "Hello, I'm Sleepy Joe." "Hello, Sleepy Joe. I'm Beijing Biden. Pleased to meet you." Sorry, I just had to jump in there. Play the whole cut again.
"I had a meeting with the heads of state of our four allies in NATO, France, Germany, the United States, and Great Britain. And there seems to be a consensus that let's just see what they have to offer. We'll find out what they do. But in the meantime, we're going to continue to keep strong the sanctions. We're going to continue to provide the Ukrainian military with their capacity to defend themselves."
Really? What does that mean? What does the fact that we are training Ukrainians really mean? Well, somebody asked that question of John Kirby, who did a very, very good Biden impression. This is what he said about American involvement with Ukrainian soldiers. Cut four.
"There is, there's some liaising going on as Ukrainians go into Poland, for instance, and they are we're transposing shipments of material to them, and so there's some general liaising going on in that regard, and that's what the president was referring to.
I want to count how many times he said the word Play that again, Eric.
"There is, there's some liaising going on as Ukrainians go into Poland, for instance, and they are we're transposing shipments of material to them, and so there's some general liaising going on in that regard, and that's what the president was referring to."
Okay, guys, I did the math. We're going to do some high algebra here. We had a 23-second cut in which John Kirby, the Pentagon clown, said 13 times. That's impressive. That's more than every 2 seconds. Did I do that right? Is that good math? 13 ers in 23 seconds? I do think he did that. And then he said that we are liaising as we transpose equipment. Transpose equipment? Now, let's unpack this for a second. What's really going on? Are we training Ukrainians? Do you not know what's going on? Or are you trying to hide something? Because if you are, this is how it should go. Number one, you're not doing it, and you say, "We're not doing it." Number two, you do it, and you do it covertly. You do it surreptitiously. You could use, the CIA to train people, members of Delta Force, the SEALs, the Green Berets, who are the component that is expert at irregular and unconventional warfare. But you don't bloody talk about it. Or, if you're a real leader, you say, we just trained this regiment of Ukrainians yesterday in Poland, and we're making them more capable of killing Russians. I think that's probably what my old boss would do. Yeah, we asked these three regiments. We got them out of Ukraine for 2 weeks, and we trained them on the use of the javelin, on the stinger, improvised munitions, booby traps, because we want every stinking invading Russian to surrender or to bleed to death or be turned into red mist. That's what I do, because that would scare them. That would send a message to Putin. Hey, we're playing hardball. This time, you don't get to steal another country. But they didn't do any of it. They're bumbling fools. Nobody's in charge. Everybody says, oh, it's Obama. Obama would know anything about war. Are you kidding me? He's probably smoking a joint somewhere. Because, you know, he has a proclivity for these things. Just read his memoirs. It's not ad hominem. It's his own admission. Probably in a basement somewhere watching ESPN with the munchies. The only people who are in charge of anything are the domestic ideologues, the likes of Susan Rice, AOC, the extremists pumping the insanity of socialism, communism, transgenderism through our schools and through the centers of power in this nation. But when it comes to national security, nobody's in charge. Not Biden, not Jake Sullivan, not the politically correct Mark Milley, that fat disgrace to the army uniform, and not that clown Kirby. That's why we're living in dangerous times, because they're all amateurs. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast. Go to Spotify right now. Punch in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. It's free. Write a review. Share the links. We got a job to do. We need to take back this republic. One school board, one press conference at a time.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.